Helping young people stay in school and get early jobs could generate social benefits and big money for the government. We'll hear about the new data. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. There are new numbers out this morning about the benefits of aggressively helping young people finish school and get into jobs. Two groups were studied, both 16 to 24-year-olds. Listen to what happens to these people in the fullness of time. Kristen Lewis is director of this Measure of America project at the Social Science Research Council. She joins us from Aspen, Colorado.
The first group had been either working or in school when they were in their teens or early 20s. And the second group, on the other hand, were disconnected at that time, so they were out of school and out of work. By the time they reached their 30s, the people in the first group, the ones who'd been in school and working, were working, they earned on average $31,000 more than those in the second group.
Now, you're trying to use this data to make a case that even if you spent a fortune trying to keep younger people connected to an education or a career path, that might be cheaper than not spending the money.
Yeah, I think that people tend to think of out of school and out of work young people as a cost to society. But a much better way to think about them is as an untapped resource. So these are people who could be paying taxes, buying houses, spending money to support local businesses. And there are just huge benefits to society from investing in these young people.
But at the federal level, I mean, certainly it's got to cost a lot of money to help fix this.
So given the annual difference in earnings between these two groups of young people, more than $30,000, we estimate that the federal government would gain, on average, almost $12,000 per year in additional tax revenue for each young person who remains disconnected. The result is an estimated $55 billion in potential federal tax revenue gain per year.
The data and analysis is called Two Futures, the Economic Case for Keeping Youth on Track from the Measure of America Project. Kristen Lewis, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, David. It's great to talk with you.
You're thinking about the season for buying a pumpkin. I just got some cider. But for market participants, later this week is the beginning of another season. Let's say good morning to Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors in Chicago.
Good morning.
All right. Now, we're back in that season that starts late this week. What season?
Earnings season, kicking off with the big banks. So this Friday, we will be hearing from JP Morgan, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and others talking about their earnings and, importantly, their outlook.
That's interesting, the outlook. So you'll be looking at the numbers, of course. That is your job. But also, there'll be a narrative. There'll be a story about what the view is of those banks that are, frankly, so connected with the economy at large.
Banks are a great indicator of what's happening in the base economy here in the U.S. And so people are looking to them to see what that commentary is about from management.
I mean, what questions will you have? Things like, what are you hearing from consumers? What are you hearing about effects of the trade war?
Exactly. And importantly, confidence. Think about who banks have as their customers. It's not only the general consumer, but it's a lot of businesses. Do CEOs have confidence that they want to invest and expand their business? Are they feeling good about sales, which implies a confidence about the economy and their business going forward?
Susan Schmidt, Aviva Investors in Chicago. Thank you.
Thank you.
When my offspring were little, I'd take them to the Marketplace newsroom in L.A. Hey, kids, look at all the neat studios and reporters and engineers at work. All they cared about was the gumball machine we still have there. And if the goal is good old American gumballs, the United States is down to just one company. It's up near Buffalo. Ford Gum and Machinery has been around for over 100 years, but the gumball biz ain't what it used to be. WBFO's Chris Kaya reports.
In the small village of Akron, a sweet aroma wafts through the air outside Ford Gum and Machinery. Inside, there's a large collection of machines Ford made over the years. Company president George Stege says when he joined Ford in 1980, there were about a half dozen U.S.-based gumball makers. But Stege says a Depression-era subsidy, known as the U.S. Sugar Program, raises the price of sugar for consumers and domestic food manufacturers.
Because it's cheaper to produce gumballs in a foreign country, two of them moved up to Canada.
Others went out of business or were bought up by multinationals who closed U.S. operations in favor of low-cost gumballs from overseas. Ford survived in part, he says, by evolving and developing a retail division which produces name brand and private label chewing gum sold in more than a dozen countries.
And I think that these divisions is what will sustain us in the future.
With more people shopping online, Stege says he's not sure how much longer Ford will be selling gumballs in bulk.
There are very few people that woke up this morning and said, I got to buy a gumball and a gumball machine.
Ford's gumballs, along with those from foreign competitors, are still popular, though, at candymachines.com.
Gumballs are one of our top sellers.
That's Kevin Johnson, the company's director of operations.
I think one of the reasons for that is the profit margin. Even at a 25-cent vend, the operators can still make a profit.
Johnson says his company's expanding its warehouse capacity.
We've seen a lot of things come and go, and we've heard people say that it's a dead or dying industry, and we just don't see it that way.
Whether or not Ford gumballs stick around, chewing gum's future looks to be sweet. According to market research firm iMark, the segment's anticipated to grow over the next 5 years by $4 billion worldwide. In Buffalo, New York, I'm Chris Kaya for Marketplace.
Something to chew on there. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.